Professor of Medicine, I'm sorry, of Medical and Molecular Genetics at Indiana University School of Medicine. Dr. Prentice received the 2007 Walter C. Randall Award in Biomedical Ethics from the American Physiological Society, given for promoting the honor and integrity of biomedical science through example and mentoring in the classroom and laboratory. He is an internationally recognized expert on stem cells and cloning and has testified before the U.S. Congress and numerous other places. Dr. Prentice.
Thank you. Thanks, and thank you all for coming. We cut that other stuff short. You can read about that in the book. Let's get to the main event, the stuff that we want to talk about, which is stem cells. And I'm going to give you some basics as well as some of the latest details, because what I found is not just among the general population, not even just among pro-lifers, but even among professionals, a lot of people don't understand the basics about stem cells. I give talks at Grand Rounds to physicians where half of the docs don't know the difference between adult and embryonic stem cells and don't know that adult stem cells are, as the title says, saving lives now, thousands of lives. So let's talk a little bit about stem cells. Here's what you tend to hear in the media, especially from the liberal elites, former U.S. Senator Specter, that embryonic stem cells are a fountain of youth, and they have the potential to cure all known maladies. Now, maybe that's a little bit of hype, eh? When I heard that, I thought, well, what about dandruff? Former Speaker of the House Pelosi, and I want to emphasize that, former Speaker? That's science has taken us to a place that is biblical in its power to cure, and that's embryonic stem cell research. It's the answer to our prayers. Okay, maybe a little hype there as well. Current NIH Director Francis Collins, this research is expected to provide invaluable information on use of human embryonic stem cells, development of life-saving therapeutic strategies, and it's important life-saving research. How many lives have been saved with embryonic stem cells?
None.
Yeah, that goose egg, zero. Good. I like those pop quizzes where you get those answers. This is kind of another view. St. Peter's waiting at the gate. All the little ones are coming up. Partial birth abortion? No. Stem cell research. But in particular, embryonic stem cell research, not adult. We need to very clearly know the difference between an embryonic stem cell and an adult stem cell and the characteristics and the results. Number one, biology is on our side here. Your destiny from day one, you're an individual. You're an organism, biologically, from the moment of conception. Now, you might think that's a given, that everybody should know that, but there are a lot of people that just don't understand that basic biological fact. A lot of people think that you're going to just grow your spare parts in the lab from stem cells and hook them up, kind of like going to Stem Cell Depot, to the parts department, right? And you go up and you say, hey, you got a femur for a 57 Caucasian, you know, a heart for a 69 model, whatever you might do, just like going to the car department. That's not, for the most part, the way that we're talking about using stem cells. There are a few examples, and we'll come back to those in a moment. What we're really talking about is what most people now term regenerative medicine. So here's the fancy term you need to remember. Regenerative medicine with stem cells, where if I've had a heart attack, in most cases, the whole organ doesn't go down, but parts of that muscle are damaged. And the idea is to fill in the missing bits with stem cells. In this case, adult stem cells from bone marrow injected into the damaged part where you regenerate or repair or replace the damaged heart muscle. Okay, stem cell 101, any stem cell that we talk about has two chief characteristics that make it a stem cell. So up here at the top, the little circular arrow, a stem cell keeps growing and dividing, so there's always a pool of cells available. And that's true whether it's in your body or in the lab dish. And then number two, a stem cell, if you give it certain signals, will specialize or differentiate into specialized tissues like heart or liver or muscle and so on. Now, there are different stages of development where you can get stem cells. So here we are. We started as the single-celled embryo. After a few days, you look like this, kind of a hollow ball with some cells inside. You don't look like you do now. But that's how we all looked at that stage of our life. In fact, a show of hands of anybody in here who was never an embryo. Okay, another biological fact. The embryonic stem cells are the cells inside here. Now, to get those cells and do any experiments with them, you have to break apart and destroy that young life. You can get stem cells from later on in development, the fetal stage. And, of course, you can get stem cells from birth and onward, what we usually just term adult stem cells. Now, you don't have to be 21 years of age to own an adult stem cell. Babies are born with stem cells in their tissues and organs. They're in umbilical cord blood and the solid part of the cord and the placenta and even amniotic fluid and certainly all your tissues from birth onward. Now, this is kind of the best result for embryonic, and it's not even true. This is a little bit of hype. You know, the mouse, you'll hear these stories in the news, the mouse who had a spinal cord injury and then it threw away its little crutches and could prance around the cage. Well, that's not even true in terms of the results they've gotten with embryonic stem cells. There are problems, just practical problems with embryonic. Now, Jamie Thompson, University of Wisconsin-Madison, was the first person in the world to successfully grow human embryonic stem cells in the lab and keep them growing. Happened back in 1998, so he's kind of Mr. Human Embryonic Stem Cell. Here was an interview he did back in 2007 where he said, well, there are a few roadblocks along the way to using these embryonic stem cells, like learning how to grow them into the tissues and organs you need and not just having them make cancer or other sorts of defects instead of the cell types you need. Oh, and maybe those therapies are decades away at best. And in fact, what Jamie Thompson has done now is he's turned away from using embryonic stem cells. Now, this is the guy who started human embryonic stem cell science. But he has said scientists have overestimated the prospects for transplantation cure using embryonic stem cells. Back in 2007, he was using them just for drug development and testing, and he has switched to a different type of stem cell, a kind called induced pluripotent stem cells. We'll come back to that type in a moment. So why are people still interested in embryonic stem cells? Well, Kevin Egan at Harvard, I think, says it best. States will pour more money into this research and we'll all get more money. Follow the money. Unfortunately, true that it's an expensive science. They want to do it. They've got to convince people to give them money to do it, especially taxpayer money, your and my taxpayer money. Interesting, bioethicist Arthur Kaplan was having a discussion with Robbie George, and they recorded it and published it, and Kaplan basically admitted that back when they were making all these claims and the debate started that they were going to cure all known maladies, that the scientists knew they were lying. They knew that these embryonic stem cells were not going to get people jumping out of their wheelchairs like Christopher Reeve or any of these sorts of things, and they knew it at the time. A little admission after the fact of what we have suspected all along. Now, despite that, they kept pushing the envelope. And back in 2009, I'm sure it was coincidence, it was only a few days after President Obama was inaugurated, the FDA gave approval to a company called Geron to start actually injecting human embryonic stem cells into human patients that had a spinal cord injury. Now, they got the approval back in 2009, January 2009. Then the FDA put them back on hold. They said, well, we're not convinced it's safe. And it wasn't until finally October of 2010 that they let them actually start these experiments on these human patients. It ended up in only about a year's time. Oh, and by the way, their stock did go up, though. Another thing that they were after. But by November of 2011, having injected a total of 5 patients, they decided this really wasn't working and it wasn't going to make them any money, and they just totally stopped all of their embryonic stem cell work, not just this one trial, but the entire thing. There's one other company in the world called Advanced Cell Technology, ACT, that has injected a very few patients, about 4 or 5, into their eyes to try and treat different types of blindness or vision problems. It's only been a couple of months or so that these patients have been injected. So it's really too early to say whether they're going to have tumors or have any sorts of problems. Nonetheless, they tried to publish their evidence for the first two patients, and then they actually had to admit that, well, yeah, the eye that they injected improved, but so did the eye they didn't inject. Oh, well. So much for the real science. Ian Wilmot is, you might say, Dolly's daddy. Dolly the cloned sheep, he was the one that cloned Dolly. So he's been a supporter of cloning and embryonic stem cell research for years. He has turned away from both. And in this particular news story that's from December of 2011, he's given a talk in California, bastion of embryonic stem cell research and funding, and told them it was time to move away from embryonic stem cells. It just wasn't good science to keep following embryonic stem cells. Do need to talk just a little bit about the old frozen embryos you hear about all the time. You know, what's the usual line you hear? Well, they're going to throw them away anyway, so let's get some good out of them. Kind of good utilitarian logic. Let's not throw them away. Let's kill them for experiments. Well, but they always say, well, there are thousands upon thousands being thrown away. It turns out it's not true at all. And in fact, when Rand did a survey a number of years ago, they found, yeah, we do have a lot of embryos that we've socked away in the freezer in the U.S. At that point, it was 400,000, probably closer to 500,000 now. But what they also found was that there were very few being thrown away and very few available for research. Most of these parents wanted to keep their embryos for future family building, and that's what they called it. They knew these were their embryonic children. And I wanted to put this picture up just to emphasize. Now, some of these frozen embryos have been adopted by other infertile couples. You might have heard of the snowflake babies. Here are a couple of them. And this is from a 2001 House of Representatives hearing where Lucinda was testifying, and at the end of her written testimony, she held up this picture of these embryos under the microscope, and then John stood up with Luke and Mark in his arms. Just a few months difference in when these pictures were taken. But what his statement was to the folks in Congress was, so which of my sons would you kill for experiments? And you could have heard a pin drop in that hearing room. These are the same individuals, though. In point of fact, it's not like they're going bad like a steak in the freezer either. We don't know the total amount of time you could keep these little ones frozen in a kind of suspended animation, which we've never really addressed that issue in this country. But here's a paper where after almost 20 years, they thawed this little embryo out, put him in the womb, and 9 months later, he was born. Now, it's always difficult to look at polls because it always depends on how you ask the question. But when they started asking people across the country, do you favor using taxpayer funding for embryonic stem cell research? Not do you favor, what you usually get is, do you favor experimenting for cures with embryonic stem cells? And of course, people just heard the cure part. But 57% actually opposed using federal taxpayer money. You're in my taxpayer money. Again, it's difficult. You phrase the question differently, you'll get different sorts of responses. Now, one thing there's general agreement on is 62% say no matter how bad things are, Congress can make them worse. Okay, moving right along. What is going on in terms of federal legislation? And then we'll talk briefly about state and the situation there. There's really only one federal statute that applies here. It's called the Dickey Wicker Amendment. It's been put on as a rider, an amendment, every year since 1996 to the funding bill for labor, health, and human services. And it basically says you can't use any federal taxpayer funds to create embryos to use for research, or to kill embryos for research. And there's a key part of the phrase here, research in which a human embryo or embryos are destroyed. Research in which. Now, you got to kill the embryo and break it apart to get human embryonic stem cells and then go ahead and use that dish of cells for experiments. Most people would say that's still part of the research because you had to get the embryonic stem cells and then take them in and do something else. But it's been argued that, no, you don't have to kill them. If you don't do it with federal funds, it's okay. And so we've got a series of executive orders stretching back to President Bush where in August 2001, he said, well, some of these embryos, their cells were already in the dish. We would go ahead and use some federal taxpayer funds for that. But you couldn't use, according to Dickey, federal funds to actually kill the embryo or to endanger them, in fact. President Obama came in and in March 2009 did away with all of the restrictions and said, basically, if you kill the embryo and bring us the dish of cells, we'll give you federal money. And that's been the law and the guidelines from the National Institutes of Health since 2009.
Was this an executive order?
It was an executive order. He did away with Bush's, wiped all of Bush's things out, put this thing in, and then actually turned it over to NIH to make up the guidelines, and they said, well, if there were so-called excess embryos, and I don't know of any people that are excess, but that's what they called them, then you could use those for the experiments. You didn't have to freeze them. You could just take them from one lab into another in the IVF lab. And, oh, in fact, the IVF doctor and the embryo researcher can be the same person. You don't quite need all those embryos. Why don't you give some to us for our experiments? A little conflict of interest, perhaps. So that was 2009 when he did this. At one point, they were saying, well, look, there are all these dishes of cells already out there. We don't even have to kill any more embryos. Well, you just provided an incentive of millions of federal tax dollars to kill more human embryos. And there were supposedly 750 existing dishes or lines of cells from different embryos. Even up to today, there are only about 300 that NIH has even looked at and cataloged. And some of those were embryos killed after you provided the incentive. In fact, the University of Michigan has about 8 new lines purposely made, they admit, so they could get federal taxpayer funds to do their experiments. Now, in the middle of this comes Dr. James Shirley and Dr. Teresa Deischer, who are two adult stem cell researchers. They sued Secretary Sebelius, NIH Director Collins, NIH, and Health and Human Services to stop any federal taxpayer funding for human embryonic stem cell research based on that little phrase that I showed you before in Dickey Wicker, because it's research in which the embryo is destroyed. You don't get this dish of cells to do experiments unless you have destroyed the embryo. At the U.S. District Court level, they fought back and forth for a while and actually did get a temporary injunction to shut off all federal funding for about 2 weeks back in 2010. And then the appeals court said, well, no, let's let this go forward. Finally, they got reversed on that. It's at the appellate court level now. I mean, everybody's been focused on the Supreme Court, but the appellate court in this particular case are also moving through. It's important pro-life legislation. And they had the oral arguments back in April. We expect that decision anytime. So probably within the next month or so, you're going to hear whether Shirley versus Sebelius succeeded or not in terms of shutting down federal money for human embryonic stem cell research. So it's just their little first page. Shirley v. Sebelius is the case that you may hear about. Out in the states is where most of the action has happened. There are a lot of states that have passed legislation, some good, some bad. And we're not going to go through all of this, but there is a real good movement here, as we've seen in terms of abortion legislation, in terms also of stem cell and cloning and other bioethics legislation to prohibit embryonic stem cell research or cloning or funding for that and move that money over towards the ethical and successful research, adult stem cells. Yes?
9 states allow cloning for research but prohibit cloning for children. Does that mean you can't?
That means you can make those little cloned embryos and then you have to kill them.
Oh.
You can't let them go. So the states are really where a lot of this is going. We'll kind of explain the cloning here in a minute for you, but there's you create the cloned embryo, and then you can either use it for experiments, or you could put it in a womb and try and gestate that clone to birth.
Oh, so there could be a Dolly
U? It's potentially possible. Now, they haven't been real successful in their experiments at even getting the clone. They have tried. And there's one case where they actually got, in California, where they actually got some cloned human embryos. They didn't make it past 5 days. Cloning isn't a real good science in and of itself, let alone a way to get cells. But there's still people that want to do it because they want the money and they want the fame. So anyway, it's the states. Here's Governor Brownback, who will be talking to y'all tomorrow night. Kansas is one of these states that's moving in a good direction. So let's talk about cloning. Okay, this is the science fiction view. Because you don't automatically create a full-grown clone, whether as a baby or an adult. Instead, you start back with the youngest stage of human life, the embryo. So here's the old-fashioned way to make an embryo, egg and sperm. You might have heard about this. It's called fertilization. You combine them, you get a single-celled embryo. It's not technically correct to call it a fertilized egg. Once that sperm and egg get together, it's an embryo. And, of course, we know that can go ahead and grow and divide. For cloning, and now the technical term, and you unfortunately need to remember this, somatic cell nuclear transfer. Whenever you hear that, you need to think cloning. So let's practice. Somatic cell nuclear transfer.
Cloning.
Okay. That's good. Very responsive audience. But here's what you do. You take a somatic cell. What's that? Well, that's just any body cell, like a skin cell. And you transfer its nucleus, you transfer its genetic material into an egg that has had its chromosomes removed. And what do you get? A single-celled embryo. That's how you made Dolly the sheep and all those cloned cats and rats and dogs and so on you hear about. So somatic cell nuclear transfer. Okay, a little slow on the uptake there, but we'll practice that. So Dolly the sheep, they took a sheep egg and took out its chromosomes, transferred the nucleus, the chromosomes, the genetic material, from a sheep body cell, single-celled cloned sheep embryo. And cloning's done as a technique right there. Now it's just, what do I do with the embryo? So if you put it in the womb of a surrogate mother, hello, Dolly. You're after a live-born clone, and you might hear this term, reproductive cloning. If instead you took the exact same embryo and you break it apart to harvest the cells, kind of like harvesting a crop, put the cells in a dish for experiments, you may hear therapeutic cloning. Now, it sounds pretty nice, doesn't it? Except it's not therapeutic for the embryo. The embryo dies, and there are no therapies from therapeutic cloning. You need a lot of eggs, and in fact, there is almost a gold rush for human eggs. This is an ad that appeared in a local paper here in the D.C. area a few years ago. And it sounds really good, doesn't it? Which comes first, the egg or the cure? List all these terrible diseases. Wouldn't you like to be part of that cure? They're after young women, 21 to 35, to come donate their eggs for, and they just call it stem cell research. Well, if you're donating eggs, you're going to be doing cloning. And, of course, in some of these cases, they'll actually pay young women. They will exploit them, offer them some money to come in and risk their health. And it is a health risk because women have died from this. A friend has put together this little movie, Eggsploitation. And it sounds funny at first until you realize there are a number of these young women who have died or been physically harmed for the rest of their life by going through these procedures to harvest eggs for experiments. And if you can't get enough human eggs, well, let's use animal eggs. So in the UK, what we just call Brave New Britain now, they actually have won the right to combine animal and human parts together. Animal eggs with human DNA. So, you know, cow eggs, pig eggs, rabbit eggs. I think if you use a cow egg with human DNA, you get a cowboy. Moving right along. Okay. So this little cartoon, the guy on the left goes, I died waiting for embryonic stem cell research to find a cure. What about you? Guy on the right, I was the embryo. And you're not sure, okay, I don't want to laugh, but except isn't this what you've heard all along? There are only two choices. You either let patients die or you kill embryos for all those cures that we've heard about. But those aren't the only choices. So back to Dr. Wilmot here, who gave up on embryonic stem cell research and also gave up on cloning a number of years ago because he said, this Japanese guy has a lot better way to get the same kind of stem cell. And a few days later, after that announcement, here are all these news stories that, hey, you could get human embryonic stem cells without an embryo, bypassing the need for an embryo, diffusing the debate. Well, maybe not totally, but it really should diffuse the debate. What happened? Well, the Japanese scientist Yamanaka showed that you could take a normal cell like a skin cell, not a stem cell at all, just a regular average cell. You add a few genes, maybe you add a couple of chemicals, but you reprogram this cell, kind of like reprogramming a computer to run a different program. And now instead of a skin cell, it looks and acts like an embryonic stem cell. The generic term for an embryonic stem cell, now they call them pluripotent. They have a plurality of potencies making all these different tissues. This was back in 2006 with mice and then 2007 with human cells when Yamanaka showed that he could do it. And in 2007, good old Jamie Thompson, Mr. Human Embryonic Stem Cell, showed that he could do it as well. And he switched his private company from using embryonic stem cells to using these induced stem cells. Totally switched them over. He doesn't use embryonic stem cells for his private company anymore. Now, even though they look and act like an embryonic stem cell, you didn't use any embryos, you didn't use any eggs, you didn't do that cloning, that somatic cell nuclear transfer. Thank you. So you could use an average cell, presto, change-o, make these different kinds of cells that look and act like embryonic. Did you have a question?
Why doesn't Pepsi, when they came out, they were using embryonic stem cells?
Well, they were using fetal cells from aborted fetuses, but they could have used these, or they could have used adult stem cells, or they could have used a number of other cell lines. Unfortunately, a lot of scientists and a lot of the companies that employ these scientists are a little bit lazy. That fetal cell line had been around for years, and so they decided, hey, we've got it here in the lab or here in the freezer, and we'll just use it. They could have used lots of other different lines. Now, my understanding is they no longer use that company for that testing, but, yeah, they could have used lots of other lines. I don't really think it was a cost issue so much, unless it's a matter of, hey, we already know how to do it in this. But it's not that difficult in a cell culture lab to switch some of these techniques to a different cell line. So it tends to be more a matter of inertia than anything else, frankly. And, you know, that it ends up being an ideology. Yamanaka, now don't get too carried away with this statement because he still thinks people can use embryonic stem cells in some cases. But back when he announced this, New York Times interviewed him and they said, well, why did you come up with this at all? And he said, well, I went to my friend's lab, looked through the microscope at a human embryo, and when I saw the embryo, I suddenly realized there was such a small difference between it and my daughter's, and I thought, we can't keep destroying embryos for our research. There must be another way. So he started this huge experiment with dozens of different additives and finally came down to these three or four. And they work like a charm. And despite what some of these scientists will say in the newspapers, if you look at what they're publishing from their labs, not just Jamie Thompson, but a lot of them are switching from embryonic over to the induced. But they will still say, we still want to do cloning, we still want to do embryonic. They don't need to. They're not actually doing it. They still want that.
Is it because they get funding?
Funding is a big issue. It's always a big issue in science. And they just kind of want open season to do whatever they want for payment with your and my taxpayer money. Yeah?
They don't get funded if it's induced embryonic cell?
They are getting funding, yeah, more and more. And it's interesting that not just the federal government, but a number of state governments. Remember California, never met an embryo experiment we didn't like. They dumped $3 billion of state taxpayer money, and it was supposed to go to embryonic stem cells and cloning. Over the last 3 years, they have started to switch, and only about 15 out of 45 or 50 grants have anything to do with embryonic stem cells. None with cloning, and the rest are induced and adult stem cells. So, you know, the facts, the truth tends to weigh here. Even ideologically, those who might want to do the embryonic, they end up switching. This little cartoon, though, here's sort of the ideology again. Back at the embryonic stem cell flight school, you can either tempt fate in one of these death traps, or I'll show you the future of aviation. But that's kind of the story we've been getting all along for the embryonic stem cell folks. Back in 2001, the National Institutes of Health supposedly did this huge review of all stem cells and said, almost, you can almost see them scratching their head, going, you know, it wasn't until recently anyone seriously considered that stem cells in adult tissues might make other kinds of cells. It's like, gee, we never really thought of that, and we didn't bother to even test it. It's kind of what you might call preconceptual science. So he's asking her, what do you want to be when you grow up? A preconceptual scientist. It's the new science of reaching a conclusion before doing the research. And then you simply dismiss anything contrary to your preconceived notions. And so when you try and protest, you just, that's dismissed. But that's what we've gotten with adult stem cells. Oh, those adult stem cells, I was taught as a grad student, there aren't very many of them. You can't find them. You can't get them out of your body. You can't grow them in the lab. They can't make other tissues. They won't treat anything. All of a sudden, it's like, you know, never, nobody ever thought to test that. Well, this is an older slide. It doesn't show all of the possible adult stem cells. But in red are some of the tissues where we now know you can find adult stem cells. And in black, some of the other kinds of cells we know they can become. Bone marrow. Anybody in here know somebody who's had a bone marrow transplant? There are usually several, yeah. Those are adult stem cells. We've done them for 2-3 decades now. But it wasn't until the 90s that they realized it's a stem cell in the bone marrow. In fact, most of the time now they will say, we're going to give you a stem cell transplant. But they still drop the adjective because adult stem cells are the only stem cell that actually is treating anybody. But it's adult stem cells. You need to remember that. The brain has adult stem cells, muscle, umbilical cord blood. Instead of throwing away that baby's cord after they're born and we cut the cord, we need to be saving the blood and the solid cord because it's a rich source of adult stem cells. I mean, even liposuctioned fat has adult stem cells. Now, if we needed an unlimited supply of stem cells, you know, we're pretty well off as a nation. I'll certainly be able to donate. But the point is, there are all these sources, and in fact, in a lot of cases, you can use your own, so you don't have to worry about transplant rejection. In fact, yeah?
I heard that was very expensive to save the umbilical cord for, like, if you have a child who's...
Ask me that in just a little bit. That's if you're privately saving it, but it's zero cost if it goes to a public bank. But,
oh, okay.
But remind me, and let's go back through that, because that's a good question. They did a study a couple years ago, and they found your chance, your probability of needing an adult stem cell transplant is about 1 in 200 in your lifetime in the U.S. So we need more sources or need to be able to identify and develop these treatments with adult stem cells. They're doing it actually on unborn babies now. Very few cases, but the first was actually in 1996. There's still some cases where they're doing it, and they're finding out that the basic problem they have to come up with is getting a good match. It's always the problem of getting a good match. And you're not going to take it from a little unborn baby and give it back to him. So you have to find a good match. Well, most recently he said it looks like mama's the best match. Even if she wouldn't normally be a good match, while you're still in the womb, mom is your best match for these kinds of transplants. You do need to be aware. Everybody needs to be aware that you don't just go type on the internet, oh, stem cell transplant, yeah, I'm going to go to Ecuador or, you know, Timbuktu or something like that. You want to make sure that it's a valid clinic that has done their backup, that have even published studies. country-specific or FDA approvals and so on. And they're starting to slowly categorize these, but there are snake oil folks out there. So just, it's buyer beware. You have to be careful, especially if you're going outside the U.S. This is out of date in terms of a school board. It's well over 80 now, but different diseases or conditions where adult stem cells have published scientific evidence that they've benefited patients. Not lab rats, real people, alive and healthier because of adult stem cells. Over 73 now, like I say, it's closer to 80 or 90, but with the published scientific evidence. You've got groups using even Dick Van Dyke and other folks now to start to publicize their particular treatments and more research going on. You can go to a website, clinicaltrials.gov, and I did a search on adult stem cells, not just watching what happens, but actually using them to treat a patient. And it's a little hard to see, but it's 2,457 different clinical trials going on, FDA-approved trials. Now, you've got a little yellow sheet that was on your seat there. Feel free to take that with you, even take a few more if you want. But different websites that you can go to find legitimate information about adult stem cells and treatments, and it's got, it's kind of long there, I apologize, but it's got that link to give you this list. And once you get to this list, you can, refine search is what that says, where you can type in the particular condition. How many trials are there? You click on one of these links and it gives you all the information about the trial, who to contact, how to qualify, and so on. Or you can go on and see it on a map. A lot of it's still experimental. There is no doubt about it. But we're moving fast forward with adult stem cells, where embryonic is doing nothing but give tumors to rats and mice. This is from a Journal of the American Medical Association paper a few years ago, and it's from 2006 data. It was the last time they had a full set of data for the entire world. Over 50,000 adult stem cell transplants a year around the world. Over 50,000, so it's even more now. In fact, I saw a number recently that there are over 10,000 adult stem cell transplants in the U.S. per year just for multiple myeloma, a type of bone marrow cancer. So let's meet some of the patients, though, because I think this really tells the story. Caitlin had a whole new bladder, functional bladder, constructed out of her own adult stem cells. Helen Thomas here was going to have her leg amputated because she wasn't getting circulation down into the lower part of the leg. They took some of her bone marrow, they injected it in, it grew new blood vessels, and she's out dancing with her hubby now. You can use cord blood stem cells especially because you don't have to have an exact match. So it's a great way to get a good match, especially for minority needs when you can't find a match. Now, there are public and private banks for cord blood. The private banks are the one that you see the flyers about in the doctor's office, and they charge usually several thousand dollars to do the collection when the baby's born, and sometimes it's several hundred dollars per year. It's kind of like an insurance policy that the parents are buying. We need to be saving all the cord blood we can. And if people can afford that or want to do that, I don't want to discourage them. But I think the best route is actually the public banks. And we've worked with Chris Smith to pass legislation for federal money to start more public cord blood banks, where it doesn't cost the parents or the doc or the hospital anything to collect this cord blood, put it into a bank. Anybody can come in. If they get a match, they will pay a fee. I think it's usually about $10,000 or $20,000. But a lot of these are now covered by insurance as well. So a lot of the cancers or anemias and so on.
So if you save, say, your baby's cells, you can sell those to other people?
Well, no, you don't sell them.
You said $20,000.
No, you have your baby's cord and you donate it to the public bank. And then if I need a transplant and I match with that, then my insurance company or I will pay for the cord blood.
So it's not in your name anymore?
No.
Or if your child becomes ill, you can't find that.
Right, but you probably don't need to find that. If we're collecting enough of these, here's a bunch of patients who have had cord blood transplants for things like... Yeah, there's Chris again. This was once we finally got the cord blood bill passed to set up more public banks. But I want to point out here, lots of different patients, different types of conditions. Keown Penn had sickle cell anemia, severe sickle cell anemia. It's a genetic disease, so, and they didn't save his cord anyway, but they couldn't have used his. You had to get donor cord blood. They matched him up, but it wasn't a perfect, I'm sorry?
Why couldn't they have used his?
Because it's a genetic disease.
Oh, right.
And so you don't want to give him back the same genetic thing. But anybody else's could have matched. Well, they couldn't get a complete match, but it was a partial match. And it turns out if it's bone marrow, you've got to have an exact match, or you tend to have some problems. If it's cord blood, you can have a little mismatch. And that was the case with Keown. And in fact, his sickle cell anemia is gone, and he went from type O to type B blood afterwards, too.
Wow.
So you can get some kind of interesting things there.
And Julius Irving is
yeah, Dr. J, not too many people recognize. Thank you. Dr. J also helped us push that through Congress. It's actually been re-upped for the second five-year period, moving along really well. One thing I want to point out, I don't talk too much about cure. The other side promotes and hypes cures. Well, I don't think you can say most of these are cures, but with sickle cell anemia, they talk about this now being curative, adult stem cell transplants, and they actually use, in the published medical journal, they use that term cure. Here's another family. Little Joe Jr. Was diagnosed at birth with severe sickle cell. His parents were told he wouldn't live to be a teenager. It was so bad. And then along came little brother Isaac, and he was a good match with his cord blood, and now Joe Jr. doesn't have sickle cell anemia anymore. They've used it to regrow bone. This gentleman, the kind of lovely medical pictures that some of us like and some people go, ew, he lost his jaw due to cancer. Well, what they did was they took a titanium mold, shaped it just right, filled it with his bone marrow, and planted it under the skin on his shoulder, let it regrow the bone, and then hooked him up a new jaw, and he had his first solid meal in 9 years. The skull pictures down here are a little girl who essentially you could say had a permanent soft spot. She wasn't closing in the bone on top of her skull, so she always had to wear a helmet. And then they used some of her own adult stem cells from fat tissue. You don't need very much. And they put it on a little map, and she regrew the bone on top of her skull. Trying to just move along pretty quick here. Dennis Turner is the only published case of an adult stem cell patient for Parkinson's. They're working on the clinical trial for more patients right now, but here's the only result. But what Dennis had was severe Parkinson's to where he couldn't feed himself. He was going to be in a wheelchair within a year. They took some of his brain adult stem cells, grew them in the lab, and put them back into only half of his brain. So it was kind of his own control experiment. He went for almost 5 years with no symptoms. Now, whether because the untreated half kept getting worse or because they started to lose the effect on the right side, after that five-year period, Dennis started to experience some symptoms again, and he would like the other half of his brain treated now. So it's working, but it's still a work in progress for something like Parkinson's. Spinal cord injury, now the little mouse that threw away its crutches or all the things that they talked about doing with the embryonic, with adult stem cells, they have done. Not a cure. Silvio isn't running any marathons, but he was quadriplegic. And 2 years after his accident, they used some of his own adult stem cells from his nasal tissue, transplanted into his spinal cord area. He's got a couple of little ankle braces on, is all. He can stand, he can walk a few paces, he can wave his arms now. It was nasal adult stem cells, so it kind of gives up your nose a whole new meaning for stem cells. Heart damage, there are dozens of cases now. Here's the lovely Science study, but here's Doug Rice, who couldn't have walked from here to the end of the table without stopping to rest. He had severe chronic heart failure. And then he had some of his own bone marrow adult stem cells injected into his heart, and he was walking us to death all over Capitol Hill talking to different congressmen about how adult stem cells saved his life. The Germans have been doing this for 10 years, and it is covered by insurance in Germany, and they're writing textbooks on it now. I was on a flight someplace a couple of years ago and found this ad from Emory, and the guy's, you know, jumping out of a plane, which would have given me the heart attack, but says, you know, what if you could do this after a heart attack? They were advertising, even though it was still a trial, advertising that they were using the patient's own adult stem cells to treat. A couple of trials going on in Houston for stroke. They haven't published but one small result at this point, but early on it looks very good, not just within a few hours, but this says within 24 hours. This original treatment they did within the first 2 to 3 days, now they can do it up to 19 days after the stroke and still get recovery of the patient. Juvenile diabetes, Giulio Voltarelli in Brazil, working with Richard Burt in Chicago, have been treating diabetic patients, newly diagnosed, so they're trying to catch them early. They give them a very, very mild treatment of chemo, because what they're trying to do is stop those rogue immune cells that are attacking their own body. And then they give them back their own adult stem cells from bone marrow. And some of these patients have now gone something like 7 years without any insulin. Multiple sclerosis, same kind of thing. Here's Barry Gowdy, who's now 8 years since his treatment, has had no symptoms of his multiple sclerosis. Nate Liao had a fatal genetic skin condition. It's called epidermolysis bullosa, EB for short. Obviously, it's easier to say. But it's a terrible fatal condition. These little kids' skin just falls off. You cannot hug them. Well, what they found was they could take, again, it's genetics. You need donor. So they took donor bone marrow or donor cord blood, gave it to these little kids, and they started to grow fresh new skin. And this one just sounds like science fiction, but here are a couple of the published announcements about a skin cell spray transplantation. Okay, all the fancy words, but just call it the skin gun. They actually have this. A group in Chicago, in Pittsburgh have been developing it. Jorge Gerlach has come up with it, but it is spray on your own adult stem cells, and much, much quicker than the old, we're going to take skin from here and transplant it here. Usually within a week, they're growing fresh skin. They used it for burn victims. They're using it for diabetic ulcers and various things now. Still early on, but it's shown great, great results. I'm sorry? I think so. I don't know if they've published that one yet, but... I'm sorry? It's at University of Pittsburgh is the main site, although a couple of other places, University of Utah is doing it too. They actually, the skin gun thing, this is from a National Geographic video. If you just go on YouTube and type in skin gun, you'll come across this little short video. Eyes, here's the paper, but this is a little more dramatic. So before and after using adult stem cells from usually the eye of the patient. So this is cornea now. It's not deeper in the eye. It's the surface, but where they're growing whole new clear corneas with the patient's own adult stem cells. In fact, one patient had been blind for 50 years, and after this transplant, could see 20/20. I mentioned before, usually you're not going to grow the whole organ and then transplant it in, but there are some cases. I showed Caitlin with the new bladder. Here is Claudio Castillo. They grew a new trachea, a new windpipe for her. She was going to have one of her lungs cut out. They decided, hey, let's grow a new windpipe. And so they took a cadaveric piece. So the person had died. They cut that piece out, stripped all of the cells off, and then they basically basted that protein with her own bone marrow adult stem cells. After a few days in the lab, it looked like this, transplanted it in. A week later, she walked out of the hospital. Yeah. They got essentially the matrix. You see the little bumps and ridges here? So they took that after the person had died, stripped all the cells off. Yeah, after the person was died. No. Basically, there's some protein, kind of a scaffold sort of thing. Cartilage, yeah.
So there's no ethical issue there?
No, no. This is donor app, but it gets better. So then they said, well, why grow it outside for a while? So they took that, they based it, and then they put it in and let it regrow inside the patients. And they were doing it with cancer patients who were going to lose their windpipes. And then they decided, well, let's make a synthetic one so we don't have to worry about getting donor cadaveric tissue. So they took a synthetic matrix, and for this cancer patient, they grew it outside, but it's this synthetic. It's not the cartilage from any donor, but it's then with his bone marrow adult stem cells to make the new tissue. It grows into the shape and form that they need. They transplant it in, and the guy's back home again now. Some yes and some no. Hold that thought for just a second. Angela Irizarry, this is a more recent story where she needed a new vessel, basically, a blood vessel for her heart. She had a congenital condition. So they used some of her own bone marrow adult stem cells to regrow the vessel. And, you know, she was basically oxygen deficient. It's potentially a lethal problem. Her heart has started to respond and grow and expand that into another chamber for her heart, and she seems to be a normal little girl now. Very experimental, yes, but it's working.
So you have to sign your life away
from her? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Now, you know, a lot of you, or some people, when I give this talk, they go, oh, that's great, yeah, and they'll go out feeling good, but they'll never tell anybody about it. Remember, half of physicians don't even know this stuff. So instead of being the Not My Job Award, I want you to take a good look at that. You need to tell somebody. You need to tell your doctor. Hey, do you know they're using adult stem cells to treat patients for dozens of things, thousands of conditions, or thousands of patients all over the world. You know, tell your family, tell your friend, tell your folks at church, all this, anybody you come across. We had one patient, Carol Franz, who had multiple myeloma. She got multiple years added to her life because of her own bone marrow adult stem cells. She had these fluorescent shirts printed up that says adult stem cell transplant survivor. On some of them it said not embryonic. We took her to Capitol Hill. We had to pull her off of Chuck Schumer. She was going to eat him alive.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, anybody, she'd get in the taxi and she'd say, hey, do you know about adult stem cells? She'd walk into an open door, hey, have you ever heard of adult stem cells? You may not have to be quite as vociferous as Carol, but you should tell somebody else. What we've done at Family Research Council, we've started a project called Adult Stem Cells Save My Life Education and Awareness Campaign. Say that real fast three times. But the idea is we put up a website with some videos, just short videos of patients that have been treated with adult stem cells. And they just tell their story. And in fact, one young woman who was going to die and then her life was saved by her own adult stem cells said, you know, when they said stem cell transplant, I thought embryonic because that's the only thing you ever heard. And then I found out it's mine. It's my adult stem cells. Wasn't that the answer we're all looking for? Well, certainly it is. So be sure and tell somebody else about adult stem cells. Go to the website or these other websites, please go by the FRC table out there. We've got some videos that you can pick up and some other information. Thank you all very much. And I think we've got maybe 5-10 minutes. Oh, we got lots of time. Okay. Insurance and cost.